Another episode of Comaholics. I'm your host, the Apocalypse Leopakis, joined by
it's your old buddy Dirt.
What are you doing?
Everybody? Hi. How you doing?
Fantastic.
I'm great with intros.
So here we are again, and usually we're at my bar in my garage, but it's bitter cold out there, so
actually it's not bad today. But when we planned on doing this episode, it was negative 9,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, it was cold.
So, we probably would have been fine tonight, but, you know, whatever. Well, and we also postponed the show.
Yeah.
Because we were going to do this last weekend?
Right before Thanksgiving.
Right. And that didn't work out too well for me.
So, we're late, folks, and we got a lot to cover. Not only in this episode, but we've got the next two pretty much planned out.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that later. So, tonight we're also, we have a studio audience member.
Again, our one studio audience member has returned. And we're actually guests in his house tonight, which is, I usually don't get invited to people's houses.
Uh-huh. I know why. We all know why.
It's usually kind of the opposite, where it's just like, I'm not going to let you know where I live. And that's usually the type of reception I get. Mm-hmm. So this is nice. We're in his what do you call it, your stud room? Because it's not a bachelor pad, because you're married, so.
Right.
So what do you call this?
I guess it would
it's a man cave.
Man cave, yeah.
The dungeon.
Man cave. So, and actually, this is not, like, this is my basement, but much cleaner.
Well, thank you. I've been working on it.
Well, like my basement has all these exposed beams and everything, except I still get a lot of dust and stuff falling down, and I don't know how to take care of that, except I take posters and I staple gun them to
the
studs.
The dead skin as it falls
so
through.
Yeah, there's just like an inch of like wood dust above these posters.
Just whatever
they
you
fall
do, don't
down
smoke that stuff, okay? Leave
really?
It alone. Yeah, throw it away.
I don't know. There's this guy who looked like Tommy Chong that was telling me it's good stuff.
No, he's wrong.
Is he?
So, anyway,
in the man cave here, let's talk a little bit. What do you want to start with?
Okay, well, I think we already got it plotted out. First, let's talk about what you read this week.
Would you call it your top of the stack?
No, we will not call it top of the stack. I will make sure that...
Because that's Ryan Porter's
yes,
term from his column.
Yes, be respectful. And he's had that column a lot longer than we've had this podcast. So.
Sure enough.
So, Doug, start with you.
I read Walking Dead.
Okay.
Fantastic, as usual. In fact, actually, to the last couple days, the two main books that I read were 28 Days Later and Walking Dead. So my two zombie books both came out this week, which, like, on the one hand, it's great. But then on the other hand, it's like, oh, man, they both came out. So it's going to be a while before I get the next issue of either one. But both had some really great stuff, although Walking Dead is ratcheting up for something really big, whereas 28 Days Later was more of time to take a rest and a breather after everything that's happened the last couple issues. And relax a little
but
bit.
But it doesn't end that way.
It doesn't end that way, no. But that's what most of the issue is. Because they actually, in 28 Days
Neither
Later...
Neither of them, actually. They both have that...
Well, but in 28 Days Later, they have that moment where they find a house. It's got some medicine. It's got some food. And they actually find water in the hot water heater. Mm-hmm. So they're able to pull it out of the pipes and fill up a bathtub with
water.
Selena
and senses something's not right, too.
Yeah, she knows.
Really eerie.
She's like...
You know she's a badass. So, you know, I mean...
There's something
honestly,
else...
Honestly, I would be the girl. If it was her and I, you know, and, you know, we're in Scotland or in England, I would be her bitch. Whatever she wanted me to do, I would do it.
Well,
she's a badass, you know. And
well, that's with most women.
She's, right. And if she said, I sense something, I'm paying attention, you know.
But it was not, whereas, as opposed to Walking Dead, which this month was a whole lot of, there's a problem starting to develop, we need to deal with it, let's go out there, let's deal with it, and then, like, holy crap, this is a lot worse than we thought.
Yeah, it's no longer just a problem. It's
like, this isn't a problem, this is a major issue. we have to deal with.
Now, with Walking Dead, though, I found the previous issue, there was a lot of character development, and it was like, I thought there was going to be some resolve to that in this issue, and there wasn't at all. It didn't, it was very little, I mean, there was some dialogue there, definitely, but nobody changed, everybody was static.
Well, except you got a little bit more, what's his name, not Abraham, is it?
Other than the guy that came back and said, I'm never going back out there again.
Well, yeah, but the guy who runs the village, is it Abraham?
I think so.
The old black guy with the goatee, and I think
his wife dies.
And, but anyway.
Spoiler!
Anyway.
If you're all current, you know what I'm talking about.
But you got a little bit more into his psyche, because he's having a bit of a breakdown.
Oh, he's just basically said, screw it.
I'm not
dealing with this anymore.
But it's a little bit
Rick's
different.
A better man.
Last time, it seemed more like he was defeated, whereas now it seems more like he's having a breakdown. There's a little bit of a difference between saying, I'm not good enough for this, and why bother? You know what I mean? There's a little bit of a difference there. So that kind of came across. Whereas in 28 Days Later, it was just one of those where... Oh, I got a text message. That's nice.
Oh, way to go.
28 Days Later was just...
No, let's all stop the podcast.
I'm not going to stop the podcast. I'm still talking.
So, basically, same thing for me this week. Willie Nelson? What's that say?
Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen just died?
Oh. Leslie Nielsen. Breaking news on the Common Holds podcast. Leslie Nielsen died.
Whoa. That's a shame.
That's so weird, because I was just watching Airplane today.
You killed Leslie Nielsen. Don't watch any more movies.
Any 80s movies, apparently. Wow, that's so sad.
All right, sent my reply. Now I'm going to mute the phone, okay?
Well, a moment of silence for Leslie Nielsen.
Actually, he probably would have enjoyed a fart noise right there.
Right, yeah.
Maybe I'll go back and edit one in.
But, I know I picked the wrong time. Quit sniffing glue. That wasn't Leslie Nielsen, but, you know.
I'm so, deadly serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Wow, that just kind of broke the whole mood of what we were talking about, but...
Although, to be fair, we're talking zombies, and if Leslie Nielsen came back as a zombie, I think I'd be okay with that.
You think you'd keep him around?
Like, I don't think I could kill a Leslie Nielsen zombie. Like, you'd have to pin him up in the backyard or something. Like, put the chain around his neck.
Right.
And just attach him to the side.
Yeah. Get him a runner.
Yeah.
You can have a runner.
Yeah, just let the Leslie Nielsen zombie run back and forth in your backyard.
Then you can get OJ, dead OJ, and he could be his Nordberg.
Ooh. Yeah. Wow, that'd be cool.
So anyways.
Although that reminds me, in 28 Days Later,
there's a Nordberg?
No, they find the starving zombie.
Yes,
they do. They go into a house, and they find a zombie laying on the ground, and he's just kind of writhing and not moving. They're like, what's wrong with him? And they realize he's starving. He hasn't eaten in so long that he's just on the ground. He can't really move.
So starvation won't kill him?
So, well, it's not killing
him, down.
But he doesn't have the energy to get up off the floor. He doesn't have the energy to come after them. Huh. So he's just kind of laying on the ground, like kind of moaning and writhing around. He's still a zombie. But because he hasn't eaten, his body doesn't have any energy, and it's starting to break down.
Hmm.
And I found that to be really... Because 28 days later, the zombies aren't really zombies.
They're infected...
They're infected with a rage virus.
Yeah, it's kind of like Resident Evil.
Yeah, I mean, they're just... They run at you, they claw, they don't care if they go through
when
pain.
When I first saw the movie, I thought of Resident Evil for some reason.
Well, Resident Evil are zombies. I mean, they are.
Right, but I mean, that same kind of like, you know, they're fast-moving, they're ultra-violent... You know, full throttle, I'm going to rip your face off.
Oh, it's like Resident Evil, like, 5 or whatever.
Yeah. No, like the first one.
Are you talking the movie?
The movie. The game.
Oh. Not the game.
I only saw the first movie and it sucked, so I never went back.
Well, anyways. So I read the same things you did, probably. And you know what? It was funny, because anytime I get Walking Dead, I have to plan it so that way it gets the most attention.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to be interrupted. Like, that's right. One, like, I need...
Honey, I'm reading Walking Dead. I'll be in the bathroom.
All right, did the kids go to bed? Yeah, did the kids go to bed? I'm going to go take a dump. When I come out, my legs will be asleep. I'll be wobbling around.
Get those red marks on your legs.
But I'm going to be reading it. So just leave me alone.
And what else did I include in that? X-23?
The baby swallowed a nickel. Yeah, well, just
whatever.
Do something. I'm reading.
It'll digest.
Yeah.
X-23 was in there.
Number 2?
Yeah.
That's been out for a while, hasn't it?
No, number... Is it number 2 or number 3? Which one did I just read? I don't know, but it got better. Like, the very first issue was a lot of build.
Well, it was a lot of her, and she's at the school, and the other kids are mean, and it's like, oh,
and then, I have to mention just Deadpool, the regular Deadpool.
Yeah, trailer. Actually, did you read 29, the one that just came out?
Yes.
The third part with Steve Rogers?
It. Oh, that was so awesome. Funny.
That was hilarious. I love that.
And then also I read Deadpool Max, which was great because they did kind of a twist on his multi-personalities.
Right.
Whereas, like, the nurse is talking, but what he's hearing is what he wants to hear in his head. Like, oh, I want you so bad. I want you inside. No, I don't want to get too dirty.
But then his inner voice.
But then his inner voice is actually saying what she's actually saying.
Right.
So it's like a it took me like 2 pages to figure out. I'm like, is she really talking dirty to him? But.
Well, who wouldn't talk dirty to Deadpool?
Well, yeah, he's all scarred up. And then I read Deadpool Core, and you know what?
I still haven't.
I almost like wanted to take it off of my collection, but I'm gonna keep it on there. It's getting better again. I don't know.
It's like I have all the issues of Deadpool.
Somebody's gonna die next time. I'm pretty sure there's gonna be a dead Deadpool.
Like I think 7 or 8 just came out, and I've read like up through like 3.
I think you told me 3.
And I've got the other issues sitting there. I just never. Like, they're sitting there, like, right. I paid money for them, I bought them, right. I just haven't read them yet. They're just kind of, like, meh.
And I'm reading Brightest Day, and I'm still trying to read all my back issues of Blackest Night and get caught up at the same time. It's a little confusing, but... Anyways, so how about you, Dan? Where are you at?
Some of the last ones that I got was Superior 2, that actually came out just...
Forgot about that one,
yeah. With an F-bomb on the first page.
Right.
I noticed that. It's like, this is my take on Superman. Oh, first page F-bomb. Issue 2. Nice.
From there, I got the X-Files 30 Days of Nights, which, actually, I really enjoy that story. I'm not only a 30 Days fan, but I am an X-Files fan.
Yeah, well, and it's also one of those things where, like, I kind of forget, when X-Files started, it was very much one of those where something happens, but was it really aliens, or was it the person going crazy? You know, did they really see a ghost, or was it just, like, a flash of light, and it, you know, whatever, and so, it kind of left it in the air, but then I forgot, like... As the series progressed, it became like, yeah, those are aliens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, that's a poltergeist. Yeah, that's a vampire,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I kind of forgot that it went from being, like, subtle to blatant as the series went on. And 30 Days of Night is a very blatant horror vampire series.
Yes.
So when the two of them came together, like, I remember reading, like, the first issue, and I'm like, wow, they're just throwing a vampire straight at them. You know, it's like, there's no denying it. You know, there's none of those subtleties that the first couple seasons of X-Files had.
Right.
But then, as I was watching, like, flipping through channels and I ran across some of the later episodes, I'm like, oh, yeah, they were really blatant about, you know, like, here's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, straight up, that's a monster.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and so then I'm like, okay, now I kind of get back into that frame of mind, and I read the latest issue.
And boy, it's violent, too.
Well,
Night is really violent.
And in the latest issue, they do that autopsy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. On that one they found.
The flipper guy?
Yeah, because at first she's like, well, you know, they can have birth defects.
And he's like, no, no.
And then they open the mouth, and there's like, yeah, there's like 6 rows of teeth in there.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Yeah. He's a lamprey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I dig that. And I like Tom Mandrake's art. Like, it doesn't fit.
Yes, just dark enough.
Like, there's like he did a Spectre series that I thought was really good, but he's one of those people, like, he couldn't do Superman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He could probably do Batman okay, but, you know, there's a lot of books.
Batman? Oh!
Say, I could see his artwork kind of going alongside, and I like Sandman and things like that, where it doesn't have to be so defined. It's meant to be like a vision or a dream or whatever, maybe. And in the X-Files case, it's leery.
Right.
I mean, it still has like that Chris Carter overtone, but he has nothing to do with this one. And so... no, but next to that, there's some other titles I got to pick up that I forgot to last week, so.
What's that?
Actually, there are a couple things that we have sitting at the store for you.
Yeah.
Murderland, 25 to Life.
Yes.
Is that it, or was there something else?
There should have been 2 more, I think. There's like 4 altogether, and they came in like the...
Yeah, well, because what happens is, and this is just for everybody listening at home, now you know. But the comics, I actually go to UPS and I pick up the boxes of comics, I take them home. And I separate them out, Marvel, DC, and Independence.
And then I swipe what I want before he gets a chance to get to the store.
And then Aaron shows up at my house and goes, oh, I'm taking this and this and this and this.
So
and
you
I have
go
to go, no, leave that, put that back.
So if you go to Killing Enterprises and you go up to the rack and something's missing, I probably took it before you got a chance to get it. So you can hate me.
So anyway, so I go through and I basically have to scan all the covers and I get the solicitations of what the issue's about. And I put together a listing that I email to Damien, and then he puts them on his web store so that we have everything listed online. So usually Marvel gets done, DC gets done, and then I kind of flip through the independents and separate them out, and a lot of times it's like Dark Horse, Avatar, Boom, those get done first, you know. And then about that time, I need to take them to the store, put them on the rack, people are going to come in. And then the other independents, you know, sometimes like Image, IDW.
Oh, they're on the wayside then.
Well, no, it's like I run out of time.
Right, yeah.
Because people are going to come in and want them. Right. Now, it's going to be nice at the beginning of the year, starting in January, to get Tuesday delivery. You can't buy them until Wednesday, but I have them on Tuesday to inventory them, get them ready. So you show up at 10:30. You show up at 10:30 when the door's open, they'll be on the rack ready to go. But yeah, so that's how it breaks down. So Dan came in, picked up his comics, and he's like, oh, well, where's this? They're supposed to be out. Oh, yeah, they were at my house. Yeah. I didn't drop the ball. I was just still working on them. So anyway.
It's all good. I have plenty to read, so.
Yeah. Well, and he's the same way. I'll be like, oh, we missed you on Amazing Spider-Man. He's like, I've got 10 other books to read. Yeah. I'll get to it.
No, you always catch stuff that I... Because usually I'll look at previews and scan through it, you know, like a few days before just to, like, count the number of comics I have. But then sometimes I'll pick up extra stuff, and then that doesn't even matter.
So. Yeah, and there's always, like, when you work at a comic book store, there's always that deal of, like, I know they'll want to read this, but they didn't ask for it, but I'm going to put them in their pile anyway.
Right.
You know? Happens all the time. Because we've got guys who are like, oh, well, I want to read the Batman stuff.
Especially when it comes to tie-ins.
Yeah, because like with Batman Incorporated.
Because I don't always pay attention to the tie-ins.
With Batman Incorporated, Azrael, I think it was last week's issue of Azrael, tied into Batman Incorporated.
Right.
But, you know, unless you're buying all the Batman-related books anyway, you're never going to know that until you walk in and you see it sitting there. So it's like, well, I know there's going to be someone who wants it.
Like my obsession with Deadpool. Right. For Pulp and Max. Which I'll probably end up going back and buying them anyway.
Well, you know, those are both great series.
Yeah, they are. I like Max, but I think a little better.
Well, the heat kicked on, so I don't know if you guys can hear that.
No, that's our little team of midgets hammering away, making us a printing press. All
right,
we're going to come out with our own comic book. Oh, okay, so let's just recap real quick, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get started. But we're going to start off with Christos Gage, Dante's Inferno.
From Wildstorm.
With the artist Diego Latorre.
Sure, I'll let you say that.
And then we're going to do Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Saga of the Swamp Thing.
Saga of the Swamp Thing from the 80s, I think it was 84?
Yeah, whatever.
86, something like that. And then we'll wrap it up with Alan Moore's The Courtyard.
Yeah, so you get mini Alan Moore podcast there, the last two segments of the show. Right.
So.
All right, so we'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to a podcast on PopCultureNetwork.com. Be sure to head on over to the site at www.popculturenetwork.com to check out more podcasts and videos featuring toys, comic books, video games, and all the things you love. And while you're there, be sure to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you purchase helps to keep us producing. Just head over to popculturenetwork.com and click on store.
Well, there's some nice things to say about
what?
It, too.
Okay, all right. And we're back. Welcome back, folks. We're going to start with Dante's Inferno.
Now, this was sent to us by Wildstorm, so we thank them for the review copy. This is collecting the six-issue miniseries that came out earlier this year? It's based off the video game. So if you played the video game from EA, this basically ties into that. And what it is they basically took the storyline of the video game and they fleshed it out a little bit more. So you get a little bit more story than you got in the game here in this book. And to the credit of Christos Gage, he took the story that, you know, they were making for the game and he embellished a little bit more, gave a little more background. There's the stuff with... Dante's girlfriend, what's her name, Beatrice,
mm-hmm.
And he gave that character, Beatrice, a little bit more, because in the game she's just kind of like, oh, come help me, Dante, and that's really all she does.
She's like the Princess Peach.
Right, well, in here, she actually gets some story to her. You know, you get a little bit more about her background and why she cares about him and why, you know, the trick that the devil pulls on her and all that kind of stuff. So to his credit, he did flesh that out a little bit more and put a little bit more story into it. The problem I have, though, is the artwork. And I don't know how you feel about this. I felt like the artwork was... It had a very good ethereal quality to it, but it got in the way of telling the story.
I felt like it was...
Don't be too mean. You gotta be a critic.
No,
don't be critical.
I'm gonna be a little mean here. It felt like an interpretive dance on acid. Okay. All right. I'm. You know what? I'm not always very critical, so I'm gonna put my foot down here. I'm gonna give props.
Yeah, you usually like everything.
I'm gonna give props to Christos Gage. He's an excellent writer. The writing style, there was nothing wrong with it. And you know, but the problem was, the art I envisioned from reading the writing is not what I saw on the page. And it was too confusing, the frames didn't flow well, and it just, there was no connection there.
Right, I was going to say, one of the biggest problems is that from when you go from frame to frame,
you know.
Across the page, oh, we just got popcorn,
yes,
by the way.
Thank
we got
you.
A delivery. When you go from frame to frame, you know, there's a way of laying out a page.
Right.
There's a basic way of laying out a comic book page. And there are guys like... Freddie Williams III, who does, now he does JSA All-Stars, he used to do Red Robin, you know, not books of any great consequence, really, but he's one of those artists who, he is so well skilled in laying out a page. Like, when you look at one of his pages, your eyes flow from panel to panel. You never get confused,
mm-hmm.
You never get pulled off course. Like, he knows how to lay out a page... Like a carpenter can build a bookshelf. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you look at it, it makes sense. You know, I've tried to build a bookshelf before, and you look at it, and you're like, is that one of those things where you put the marble
on?
And
it's supposed to, yeah.
Rube Goldberg machine? I'm like, no, that's a bookcase.
Insert tab,
you know,
A.
Mean?
You're more
right.
That kind of carpenter.
Right. And people can lay out a page where it just makes sense. Your eyes flow. I felt like a lot of these, he would focus so much on one panel on the page, that you would look at it and go, wow, that looks cool. Like, it's a Medusa.
Right.
You know, with 60 snakes coming out of her head. That looks cool. But your eye doesn't flow from that panel to the next one.
Yeah.
It's like he knew how to paint a cool-looking scene, but when you go from this scene to the next scene to the next scene, you know, it just doesn't flow.
Now, I will give some credit there. You know, there is an interpretation of hell here.
Right.
You know? Dante's in hell, along with Beatrice, and there's a deal made with the devil, with Beatrice, on whether or not Dante is as good of a suitor as she thought. She gave herself up to him without being wed, and there's this whole romantic storyline between the two of them, as well as Dante trying to find redemption and save Beatrice. That's all of it in a nutshell.
Right.
So there's not a lot of complex...
Well, I mean, it's a 700-year-old story.
Right.
You know.
It's very simple as far as that goes. I think they try to complicate things a little too much with the artwork.
Well, I mean, here's the problem with the artwork, is that, I mean, you're dealing with hell, sure. You know, it's an ethereal plane, it's a supernatural location, mm-hmm. So, you know, like, who am I to say what the architecture of hell looks like, you know? But there are scenes before they die. There are scenes where they're in the castle. There are scenes where he's on the crusade. They look exactly the same as the scenes in hell. So it's not like he was in a normal world
and then
suddenly he sucked into this.
And the only change you really see in the art is, like, for example, some scenes in the past where he's a crusader. There's like that weird tapestry borderline.
Right, and I was going to say, I almost felt like
it was like they had to do that because, like you said, the art's so similar, that was like the only way to differentiate
what was
the past and the present.
Right, I saw those borders, and I almost thought, like, what would have been cool is if they drew it to look like a tapestry. Because
mm-hmm.
I've seen
comics do
that.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, like, the Bayou Tapestry is a comic, basically. It's just like this flow of scenes of everything that happened in the Crusades. Why couldn't they have done that for these background panels, you know, these background pages where you're looking at the past? Make it look like a tapestry. And then when he's in hell, you can have these wispy,
mm-hmm.
you know, things coming off of his head. You can have,
then
like, these blur effects.
Sense, definitely.
And you can also tell that a lot of times he would paint the page, and then they'd put it in a computer, and they put, you know, excess lines on them. They put extra...
Well, that was my next question. I never played the game.
Right.
Did you play the game?
I played little bits of it. I think I played, like, the demo.
Is it similar to the game?
No. The game is basically God of War, set in
Dante's Inferno. Well, I played God of War. I played the first one, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's very crisp, clean-looking game. So it doesn't look like this at all.
And you know what? The monsters kind of reminded me of, going way back, the I Kill Giant monsters. You know what I'm saying? Kind of...
Like every...
They all kind of had...
Every boss battle is a huge, six stories tall monster.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can see
that. And then also, I'm being more critical about the artwork. Boy, this guy's going to hate me. What's his name again?
Diego LaTorre.
Sorry, Diego. The other thing was, during the battle scenes, it was kind of confusing as to what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he sliced them or killed this, you know, ultra demon somehow, but it's like,
something,
how did he do it?
Something, you know? Something moved through the air and cut somebody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you'll see, like, a pose, but
no,
it's not like, yeah, there's
nothing.
No action pose, you know what I'm saying? You can pose a battle scene and you can tell that sword is going to slice his head off in, like, a half a second. You know? You don't see that. It's almost like they, like, picked the wrong frame.
Right.
To explain what happened.
Well, actually, I was going to say, like, Dan, did you read this?
Yes,
first
I did.
Of all? Okay. What did you think about it compared to some of the others?
Actually, played the game as well.
Oh, so, did you play the whole thing?
Yeah, I'm going to, like, throw it out there on the table. Game was actually terrible. and I really could not. And kind of like you, I played a demo one, and you always kind of get that. Well, what if this game is just this way because of a demo, and it can only be X
right.
minutes long? Actually played the game at a buddy's house. Terrible. I couldn't get Gods of War exactly. Not saying that those are terrible games, just saying that that's not my style. I need platform. I need something just to go to point A to point B. The artwork, I kind of dug a little bit, and so far as the aspect that it reminded me of, like a Dave Mack or a Dave McCain, someone that they will take a photo and incorporate it with the painting, and you can see where it's very artsy, but yeah, it did confuse me a lot. And that's one thing I disliked about the entirety, was
right.
that story didn't go...
Well, but also, like, a David Mack or a Dave McKeon will, or McKean, or however you say his name, while they will do fully painted, they will also do scenes where it's line drawings. They will
right.
do scenes where it's collage.
Yes.
You know, so... different aspects that have different meaning will be done in a different format. Whereas
right.
this is all done that same kind of, done pages. It's
you can always, like, they always had the photo sticking out, and then everything else was kind of, one thing, my finger opened up to this, and this one tripped me out, was kind of like this little montage to H.R. Giger.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
I had a lot of, like, the artwork, like, the bullets and everything.
Right, I mean, there's some neat stuff to look at.
Very, but it's confusing, and it draws you away from the story.
Right.
And it's not even that, it's not a complex story, it's not that broad of a story, but it's, you need to stay on
focus.
He can
draw good boobies.
Yeah, he can.
But it's just the artwork doesn't flow from
True.
Panel to panel. Mm-hmm. And you know, going back, I use Freddie Williams III as an example just because he does a lot of tutorials online. He does a lot of videos, and he will have people actually send him their drawn pages, and he will do a YouTube video where he actually sits down, he'll scan their page into his computer, and then he'll take his pen and draw and say, okay, well, the eyes are flowing this way, you need to make them flow this way. You drew your person this way.
Oh,
you need
really?
To draw this
wow.
way. Yeah, and it's really great to
He's
watch
like an
them.
Editor in chief for everybody.
Yeah, pretty much. And so it's one of those things where it's, you know, I went to college as an art major. You know, I actually applied to the Joe Kubert School of Comics, and they told me that I applied in May for the next year, and they said, well, you know, we only take 90 some students a year. We're already pretty much filled up. We can't take you this year. Try again. Next year, and of course I never did. Instead, I applied to the Art Institute of Chicago. It was too expensive, and I ended up at Illinois State University. But I went in as an art major, and illustration was my focus. And so when, you know, I look at a comic book page, I look at where's the blocking? Where's the flow? Where's the weight?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And books like, you know, you've probably never seen it, but I don't know if you have Drawing Comics the Marvel Way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stan
Lee and Jack Kirby
mm-hmm.
and, you know, whoever else at Marvel in the bullpen sat down and made this thick book about how to draw comics and how to ink them and how to lay out a page and, you know, all that stuff. And it's still applicable today. 100% of everything they put in that book in 1978 or whenever the hell they did that book, you know, it still works today. And I look at this page and it's like, there are some panels. He does a 2-page spread when they're on the boat crossing the River Styx. Mm-hmm. And it is beautiful. It's a beautiful looking page. There's a lot of really the stuff in the background,
it's
the
full
way
of
he's
art.
Faded
it's
it.
It's just not comic book art.
Right. It's some great looking stuff, but on a lot of those panels, when there's action going on, and you're going from panel A, panel B, down to row 2, panel C, and it's just not flowing from one square to the next square to the next line to the next line to the next square, you know?
I would love to, like, I'm sure there's an interview out there, but I would love to know what Christos Gage felt about the art contribution for this book.
Well, and he's not going to say something mean about
it. I know. But, like, it'd be nice to know his candid opinion. You know, because I felt the writing style was great. You know, I felt that... I thought
there
it was cool.
A whole lot they could do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's also one of those things they used...
what he had. I mean, he took a video game and made...
Yeah, well, I mean, they used a lot of dialogue from the original Divine Comedy for a lot of... Because, like, there are parts in there where it's written and it just looks like normal comic book script, but then there are other parts written in, like, the gothic, old English-style lettering, you know?
Yeah,
when they used a lot of that original text from the Divine Comedy. And it was kind of interesting the way it would kind of pop into that and then pop out of it, and the way it would embellish in characters that
right.
poem didn't really talk about, and whatever. But at the same time, it almost felt like you either need to do it all in the modern voice, or you need to do it all in that old English
old
voice.
Dialect.
Yeah. But to kind of, you know, pop back and forth, to me it was just a little jarring sometimes. The
you
way
think they
just,
dumbed it up a little bit for us?
I don't know if they'd say they dumbed it up as much as, you know, have you ever read the Divine Comedy?
Yeah, in high school.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's good.
What's your favorite part? You know, it's like, did you read
the part with the devil?
Like, you'd never sit there and go, "Oh, I'm bored this Saturday. Maybe I'll sit down and read the Divine Comedy."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like there's a certain level of you either have to say this is going to be for literary geeks and go whole hog in like making it this
masterpiece,
right? Or you just have to say this is a story about hell. Let's show some demons and some boobs. You know what I mean?
They got it. They did it.
So
not
it's like
the way I interpreted it, but
it kind of pushes, you know, it kind of goes back and forth. And it's like you kind of got to pick one voice or the other voice. You got to pick one style or another style.
So, what's the price on this book?
This book is $19.99.
I got to say, Wildstorm, thank you very much. I mean, I read it.
I will say this, though. If you're a painter, or if you're looking
into
digital painting,
it's full of great art.
If you want to just look at some really cool
but trying to put
pages,
the writing style with the art, it's a headache. Like, I found myself, like, not necessarily rereading, but, like, revisualizing the art from page to page to try to understand.
Who, Dan, do you know, who's the guy who does Wormwood, Gentleman Corpse, and The Choker?
You
Ennis?
Have to ask me that because I was just looking.
The artist.
Artist. But he's almost like Ralph Steedman. Like, it's very. It's
Templeton. Temple Smith.
Temple Smith. He's the writer, though, because didn't he do.
No, Temple Smith does the artwork.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
He also did Criminal Macabre. Or McCabe.
I don't know. I haven't read that one.
Okay.
speaking of anyway. Macabre, McCabe, just a side note. Dakin, found
Dakin.
It's Dakin, like the 80s band.
Yeah, Dark Wolverine.
Yes.
It's Dakin. He's rocking.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, the artwork on this reminds me a lot of Temple Smith in the way that it kind of mixes a traditional painted style with that computer-generated style. Mm-hmm. And it incorporates a lot of different color elements into what it's doing. You know, I mean, there is, like I said, there's some neat stuff in the artwork, but as a comic, it doesn't necessarily
work.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, usually I'm like begging to keep the trade. You can.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, I do enjoy looking at the artwork. Like, if I'm just, If I'm sitting on the crapper, this is a great thing to just kind of flip through and look at some of the panels, because some of the stuff.
So do you set yours on the tank? Because that's a big no-no. Because you know it's going to get sprinkled.
I've got
on.
A cabinet across from, okay, the,
yeah,
from the toilet.
Yeah, I've got a little cabinet above my tank where I keep mine. Oh, speaking of, usually I have my previews there. I noticed that I forgot to pick up previews this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So well, there should have been one set aside.
Because usually I've swapped out my previews by now.
But
anyways, so yeah, I have to say no, I would not buy this.
You know, at $19.95,
maybe $14.99.
I was going to say, you know, a $14.99.
If you could go, you know what? If you go to a con and you find one for $7,
all trades $5.
Yes,
$5 all trades.
Hey, I got a bunch of Hellboys that way. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, $20 is really. I don't know if that's because it's Wildstorm as opposed to being DC Mainline.
There's a lot of ink. Maybe we're paying for all that ink.
Well, yeah. How much was that Wildstorm 3.0? Was that 24?
It was about 20 bucks. 24.
24.
24? 20, yeah. Yeah, but that's like twice the size of this book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here, compare this book to that book. Wildcats.
$24.99.
Wildcats 3.0.
Oh, it's like a third. It's about half.
About half?
Because yeah. You're looking at, what, 6 to 12?
Yeah, so, but I mean, this is the difference between this being 20, that would have been $40 based mm-hmm. on this price point. You know what I mean?
I see where you're going. Yeah,
yeah, so that's kind of where I'm looking at. At $19.99... That's a little too much for this book. If this book was $14.99, if you could get a deal on this for $15 or less, I'd say go ahead and pick it up, if for no other reason than to just kind of flip through and look at some of the character designs, look at some of the artwork, like the Minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
The Minotaur is kind of freaky. Like, I don't know if you've ever, like, boiled your own meat off the bone of an animal, but it's a little freaky.
Something like that, yeah.
But, a lot of the... Just the straight artwork without trying to pay attention to the story is really neat. It just doesn't work as a comic.
No, not at all.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Saga of the Swamp Thing hardcover by Alan Moore.
I know, I'm excited about this.
All right, be right back.
What it is, friends. Sween Hollick here, inviting you to join me every Monday for Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk. What's that, you ask? Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk is my weekly video series in which we take a look at my favorite toy line of yesteryear, Vintage Playmates Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. If you're a green teen goer, I'm betting you'll have a great time getting reacquainted with old friends or meeting new ones for the first time. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk at www.radicalretro.com, part of the Pop Culture Network.
So it's like, it's not just mannequins. It's like the mannequins are alive, but they only move around when he's not looking at them. So he looks away, and then when he looks back, they're in a different position.
So what does mannequin poop look like, then?
It looks like a roll of quarters. Hey, guys, we're back. Welcome to another episode of Comaholics. We're pretty well drunk at this point, so perfect time to start talking about Alan Moore, because now he starts to make sense.
Woo-hoo. Well, yeah, thanks to this new beer raging bitch. By Flying Dog Brewery. It's like about 8.5% alcohol.
And those are Ralph Steadman.
Yeah, speaking of, you're talking about Steadman. Steadman. Steadman.
Steadman.
Steadman.
Steadman. Yeah.
Whatever.
Dockin. We're rocking.
Yeah, Dockin. Dackin. So now we're going to talk about Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing, which I believe, I want to say 84, maybe it's 86.
Well, here, first of all, again, this was given to us by Wildstorm, or actually not Wildstorm.
This is
Vertigo.
Vertigo.
Vertigo, part of DC. And this is their hardcover.
All in the family.
This is a second print of their hardcover. It actually, last year when Watchmen was big, they first published this, and it sold out, so they went to a second printing. What is this, 87? 80. No, 83. 83, 84, okay. Yeah. The foreword is copyright 87. But this is a $24.99 hardcover, which, I gotta say, this, for $24.99 for this hardcover...
Deal worth it.
Yeah, this is a bargain and a half. Look at this artwork imprinted on the hardcover.
Oh, I didn't even take the cover off.
Oh, you never took the slip cover off?
That's fantastic.
That's more beautiful than... The Necronomicon. I mean, it's gorgeous.
Like, I love slipcovers on my books, but I almost want to take the slipcover off and look at that artwork.
Wow.
So for $24.99, Saga of the Swamp Thing, I'm just going to start out this conversation by saying buy it.
Yes. Yeah, oh, most definitely.
If you want more review, we'll do it, but otherwise fast forward about 15 minutes to get segment 3.
Yeah.
Because this is, for $24.99, this is a fantastic value.
Well, and you know what? This is kind of one of those timeless pieces where it's okay to, like, it's a addition of spoilers now.
Okay, yes, from this point on, spoilers.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with talking about spoilers with this book.
Especially because it's from 83.
Right, and it's the only way to really talk about the literature of this thing.
Which, by the way, you can't have this one.
So, Alan Moore...
Damn.
Darn, I was going to ask for it.
You can have Dante's Inferno.
Runner-ups will receive Dante's Inferno.
Alright, so going back, Alan Moore.
Okay, Alan Moore in this, he jumped into this when it was kind of waning.
Right. He was 20-some issues into the series.
The original writer and artist, refresh my memory, it's on the very front of the cover.
Yeah, and I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name. It's like Lin Wayne? Oh, no, it's not on there. It's, well, he did the foreword, if you go to the foreword.
Yeah, there's a great foreword in there.
Introduction by Lin, it's W-E-I-N.
Wine.
Word.
Like Weinberg. Wine.
Possum Pfeffer.
Not like Wiener. Wine. Viner.
But anyway, he was the original writer. Mm-hmm. And the series was starting
and
to
And he gives good props to Alan Moore in that.
Yeah, and they basically said to Alan Moore, who was at this point was pretty much kind of an unproven... He had done V, I think.
No, not yet.
Oh, not yet?
Yeah, okay. He had done this, but not yet Watchmen.
Yeah, it was Watchmen before this.
Was Watchmen before this, but not me?
I think this was before Watchmen. I think he was working on it.
I thought he made his stamp with Watchmen, and then they gave him this.
Because
what had he done before this?
I think he was still
Don't
hold me against this, but I think he was still just kind of just writers here and there doing crazy some, like, British columns, writer things like that.
Yeah.
But
I love the banter that he has to say about Alan Moore in there. It's real crass and. Sharp, witty humor.
Right, well, because he talks about going to Alan Moore and kind of asked him if he was going to do the book, and he had written stuff for 2000 AD and Warrior in UK, so maybe that was it.
And then Watchmen, I think, came out right after this.
I would say Watchmen was like 86. This is 83, 84, so... Regardless, anyway, Alan Moore was kind of an unproven writer at this point. Swamp Thing was a book that was starting to, you know, kind of fall off the sales charts. They weren't sure how much longer it was going to last. And so Alan Moore just kind of said, well, you know, can I do pretty much whatever I want? They were like, fine, you know, we don't really care at this point. Because it's kind of a dead book. Mm-hmm. And so he came up with some ideas, and he shared them with Lin W., we'll call him. And he was like, yeah, that's cool, that's awesome, good idea. And so he was just kind of allowed Alan Moore to just kind of do his own thing with the character. And so one of the big things was he changed who Swamp Thing was. Mm-hmm. Swamp Thing, at this point, you would think, like, if you've seen the movie, the Wes Craven movie that came out with, was it Adrian Barbeau?
Yes, was that was the first a campy one? Movie.
And, you know... The original idea of Swamp Thing was there was this guy doing research on plants, and someone sabotaged his lab, and he falls in the swamp with these chemicals, and he gets turned into, like, this half-man, half-plant thing.
But Alan Moore starts it off, like, he's like, okay, I'm taking it from where it is now. He did like, set the footing as, like, okay.
Right, because the first issue...
I'm taking it from what it was, and now here's what it is now.
Right, because the first issue was called Loose Ends.
Right.
Yeah. And he goes in and he, like, explains. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, going back to 83, of some of what he was talking about in there is now known botany science and just science.
Right,
that we
right. But the idea was that that Swamp Thing is not Alec Holland. Alec Holland is dead. The human died. No, but what happened was that the plants that grew from that special formula, whatever, they picked up certain parts of his essence. Certain parts of his memories were absorbed by the cells in the plants, and it reformed as Swamp Thing with some memories of Alec Holland within. But Swamp Thing himself was an elemental. Mm-hmm. So this idea, this Swamp Thing, is like the 600th Swamp Thing
Well, and the way he explains that is because the plant material absorbed him, and basically it's kind of like they describe the, what are those, nematode-looking, simple...
Mitochondria, whatever.
Simple multicellular worm critters.
Right.
That basically they like, retain the memory of Alec.
Right. And so the idea is they basically ate his decomposing body.
Mm-hmm.
Certain elements got his memories absorbed, which under normal circumstances would just be lost in, you know, whatever, in the fauna, or the flora, I guess, not fauna, the fauna, the flora. But because Alec Holland was working on this formula to make the plants grow faster and grow bigger, then it made those particular elements that had been feasting on him, those are what grew.
Right.
They picked up the elemental spirit of the Swamp Thing.
Right.
And so then you had this mix of this earth elemental and this plant guy who was a researcher that kind of came
plant
together.
Plant man. Well, so like and then the next issue is an autopsy.
Yeah, well, because they kill him.
Right.
So the end of the first issue, it's basically like Jason goes to hell.
The first issue is like from the interpretation of Swamp Thing, you know, and how he's like, I gotta avoid these people. I'm trying to get, you know, I know they're after me. I need to avoid the light.
Right.
You know, and he gets captured.
And then, the final panel killed. Of the first issue
captured
is
and killed.
Him getting shot full of shotgun blasts and killed.
Can we go back to the artist once again?
Well, here, wait. We'll get to that in a minute.
Just real quick, before it gets lost in the shuffle, but Bernie White Wrightson, the original artist, he's done a lot of work, right?
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything in this hardcover, though.
No, he did the original.
Right, before this book started. Right.
Okay. I don't know much about Bernie Wrightson. I probably read a lot and didn't even know that I've read it. Do you know if the art was similar at all, the transition from Bernie Wrightson to Bissette?
Not really. I mean, yes, I do, and no, it wasn't.
Okay.
Bernie Wrightson's style is very... actually, I would say the closest contemporary of Bernie Wrightson would be Kelly Jones. And would you agree with that, Dan?
Sounds... yeah.
I would say that's the closest because it's very... It's moody, but it's still very clean. And Kelly Jones has that similar type of style. Like, the term I kind of want to use is bulbous. But
over
and Bernie, like Bernie Wrightson really made his name, I want to say, doing Frankenstein stuff and Marvel 70s horror type stuff that was very, almost British is what it felt like. It was clean, but it still had a lot of cross-hatching line work and a lot of that type of stuff going on with it. And so Steve Bissette and John... what's his name?
Michael Bolton?
Yes, Michael Bolton. Michael Bolton and Stephen Bissette. John... it's on the cover.
Totalbin.
Sure.
John Totalbin.
Their style is much more murky.
Mm-hmm.
Their style is much more... thick spaghetti noodles is what I think of when I think of their art style. So
Bernie Wrightson... you know what? I would say Dante's Inferno was a bad LSD trip. I want to say Saga of the Swamp Thing was a good LSD trip.
Yeah. But one thing I do want to say about the artwork is that...
because it is very psychedelic. There's some parts where there's, like, going between...
but is that out of the norm for that time, 83? I mean, if you think about it, it's probably not as if, like, they're trying to get people, but... I mean, if you look back at S.H.I.E.L.D. going back to, like, the 70s, it wasn't too far off because you were saying... It was very true, you know, a true human. It wasn't, like, over-exaggerated biceps and
triceps. Right, right. You didn't have that 90s kind of crazy, over-the-top action.
And so it was more realistic, but yet it had it to where it wanted you to follow along. To me, this symbolizes the way that comics are now, is when Moore started to take over and they started to kind of break away and say, yeah, you guys, you know what, this is a drowning ship. Do what you want with it.
Right.
And you see a lot of the art forms, and there has been comics before that and since that have done just that, but yet it fit together well here.
Well, like, to me, it almost feels like when you go back and watch the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it was filmed on such a low budget that when you go back and watch it, it feels like you're watching a documentary because there was no overproduced lighting. the people were not over makeup. Mm-hmm. You know, it looked very real, and that realism, you know, had a very stark contrast to what we think of today with kind of like Scream and My Bloody Valentine and all these slashers that come out now that are so overproduced and overdone and everybody looks perfect and whatever, that, you know, you watch a documentary today and the way they're filmed and you go and look at Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they have that same type of look to them, that stark, you know, crisp type feel to them, that when I look at that artwork in that book, to me it feels like, you know, before you had those slick comics that came out, before you had those, you know, multi-billion copy selling, reprinted seven times, collected in a trade 20 different times, you know, fully painted.
Variant edition for $6.
Yeah, I mean, before you had all that kind of stuff, it was just this idea that, it was line art.
Well, I want to slobber on it just a little bit more. I think the frame structure was ahead of its time.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
One thing I wanted to point out...
just here, like, we were just talking about Anatomy Lesson, which is the second issue where
right.
they do the whole autopsy. Right here, where Woodrue, is that how you pronounce it? Jason Woodrue, the scientist who's studying the
right.
corpse. Look at the frames in that. This page right here.
Right.
Where it goes from his eyes...
Very structured. And that's
yes.
easy to
well,
flow.
Well, here,
right
here,
that's
let me...
It's funny, like, going from, like, Dante, where we were saying how it was kind of a mess, even
right.
though it was, like, same structured, you know, left, right, left, right.
Well, it's like you look, like, here are the eyes kind of balanced, but at the same time, there's weight here of this building.
Right, it goes into
so,
that
so
frame.
So your eye is pulled this way, which brings you to this frame.
Folks, this
people.
Would be page 39 of your hardcover that you're going to pick up at
now,
the popculturenetwork.com.
But no, wait, but see here, you look at this frame, and it kind of pulls you down this way, but at the same time, there are these objects in the building, like the lights hanging down, which pull your eye back up, which brings you to this frame. Well, in this frame, the people are walking down a long hallway this way. So you look down the long hallway, you look at these people,
to
where's
the
their eyes?
Right.
Where's his eyes going? His eyes are going this way. This guy, where's his eyes going? Kind of back that way, which brings you down to this frame.
Right.
Both guys are walking this way. Here, he's got his hand at this angle, and that angle of his arm draws your eye back this way, where they both looking that way to the final frame.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at his page layout, and you see your eye is drawn naturally to these different spots because of the way he's drawn the artwork.
Mm-hmm. Even the shape of the frames
right.
naturally
yeah.
leads
and
to
so, so that's
natural.
One thing.
Just the art in it.
I mean, this is what I was talking about with...
That's what I'm saying. That's very advanced, because, like, if you... I'm very fond of the Dark Reign series that came out. There was a lot of frame structure in there that I really liked. And it was because of that same principle. I'm sorry.
Well,
blabbering about
here's
Marvel,
here's one thing I wanted to point out.
Just, it's very similar to a lot of modern comics that are,
right.
out today.
Well, here's one thing I want to point out. When you buy a usual trade, they take all the pages from the story, and they cut out the covers, they lump all the pages together, and they reprint them in a book. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What is this page right here?
Nothing.
It's a big blank page.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big black page with some grass at the bottom. Why is this page here? Do you know why?
Maybe
so that way you
could
actually
they
tell
have,
they when the
a...
transition is.
Well, no,
because
look, this would have been an ad in the original comic.
Uh-huh.
Now, when he drew that page, he knew there was going to be an ad there. He knew that these two pages, look at how they're laid out.
Exactly, and you'll have one of them where it was almost like meant to be.
Yeah, it's like these pages are kind of mirroring each other in their layout. And so they put that blank page in here as a filler so that it doesn't break.
So they would be back-to-back.
Right, because his artwork is laid out because it mirrors. Like, so many times you can look through here and you can find, like, right here. Look at the eagles on this page. How they mirror each other.
Yes, I did like that.
The way the page is laid out.
And that's current through the whole hardcover.
Right, I mean, so much thought went into how these pages are laid out as opposed to, like, look at this. Look at how beautiful that is.
Now, the colors are definitely in the parlance of their time.
Right.
But
the colors...
It's that flat four-color that's made...
The colors will make you realize, oh, you're handing this to me because I get to keep this.
No, because you're going to look at it while we continue to talk, and then I'm taking it back.
You know, I'm happy I got that Superman, actually, so... From last time.
But anyway.
But it also... It's very... you know, I'm going back to that word, psychedelic. It's very psychedelic, and it's charming at the same time.
And one thing I want to say...
you're drawn
right.
to you know, a lot of the...
Like the characters.
Like Woodrue, when he's going through the process, that change where he's becoming part plant, and he becomes in tune with the world, and he thinks he has to... comes up with this insane idea that he's going to save the world by getting rid of humans.
Right.
By, like, overproducing oxygen and...
Everything dies off. All the people die off.
Right. Mm-hmm. His transition in his mind with the words that Alan Moore uses fit so well with the psychedelic experiences that you're seeing on the page. Like, you know, it was like how I felt when I read his words.
Right. And one thing that I liked about the way this story was done is one, and it's kind of a problem I have with Alan Moore sometimes and the stuff he does, is he gets so heavy-handed in his message. Mm-hmm. When you read Watchmen or you read V, like, there's no room for interpretation. It's like, this is the story. This is the way I feel about it, so that's how you're going to feel about it. Whereas with Swamp Thing, it kind of felt like there's an environmental message, but it's not an environmental message because, hey, we're all hippie flower children that love mm-hmm. Mother Earth. It's like, this guy is part Earth.
And he's insane.
So that's where his feeling comes from.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm talking about
Woodrue. Yeah, but Swamp Thing. Like, he's not an environmentalist because he's a hippie. He's an environmentalist because he's part environment.
He is the environment.
Right. Like, he's upset that people walk on grass because it hurts him to have feet walking on him.
The only confusing art, like, there was this part where the Swamp Thing is back in the Earth. This page here, I was a little confused with this art. I had to stare at it. It was almost like an interpretive page. It's basically the second page of issue 22.
Okay.
Supposedly Swamp Thing's in there. Do you see him? It's like, where's Waldo?
No, let me see. I can't see it from there, really.
You know, she...
he is, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I see where it says Swamped at the bottom of the page. Okay. I see where it says Swamp Thing at the top. I see...
But then when you read the next couple pages, he's in there.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't see what you're talking about.
Well, that's the premise of what's going on there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what... I don't know specifically. Like, what are you pointing at that you say...
Okay. They're like, oh God, there he is. He's growing back into the Earth.
Okay.
And that's what's going on here. He's supposedly Alec is growing back into the Earth. You know, he's being completely absorbed. He's losing the human that he is. But you don't see him.
Oh. So you're saying you don't see him?
No, yeah.
Okay. Because I'm looking at him like, no, yeah. I don't see him. What are you
talking
about?
I think is either clever or lazy. I want to say clever. Only because, yeah, I mean, I'm really happy with this book.
But another thing is Woodrue, he becomes, what do they call him? Fluorescent man, but that's not right.
He says it when he's, like, going through
that. He's the orange and green plant monster. Mm-hmm. The Justice League shows up. And the Justice League are like,
right,
well,
at the right time though.
They're like, well, this guy's never been a threat.
Well,
like, this guy's lost every fight he's ever been in. What the hell's the problem? But then they realize, the problem is, he tapped into like this. I don't know if you want to call it like this world energy force of the plants or whatever, but it's more like they took control of him and he's their mouthpiece, as opposed to he's not the threat. He's just the mouthpiece of the threat. He just happens to be the focal point that it uses to speak, as opposed to, you know, this, C-grade Justice League villain suddenly being able to be a threat to humanity. And you've got, like, Superman and Green Arrow and Wonder Woman up there, and they're like, well, what the heck do we do? We'll call this guy. No, I talked to that guy.
Is there a Swamp Thing around there?
there's a great point that you brought that up, Doug, because actually that's one of those where, to me, this was pivotal in my comic reading. When I got into the Swamp Thing was in the late 80s. It was the same time when Watchmen has been way out, but Sandman was coming abroad at that time. I was one to buy, like, Spider-Man, those kind of titles. So to get something like this to follow along with a very great story that's gripping and to hold you back, and even as a kid you kind of understood some of the implications that it was saying, but yet with the Justice League, that's what I found funny, is that they're up there in space, and just like you said, you know, how do we do this? How do we, you know, why don't we call this guy? Why don't we do this? That's the Justice League. To me, as a kid, I thought, well, they just jumped into it, and then they figured it out. But to see Alan Moore write them to, like, almost think of consequences. Well, if we go down there, then we die.
Well, and there's also, it's also like, how do you deal with a threat? Darkseid's going to invade Earth. Okay, we go punch him in the face.
Right.
And he's done. You know, when Darkseid's unconscious, he can't take over the Earth. What do you do with a guy who's tapped into all the planets in the world?
They did a play.
And that's just what they're saying. Yeah. They're like, we die if we go down there. Yeah, so there's nothing. Just stay up
like,
here.
What do we
they
do?
They did a play on his last name, Woodrue. Is what they did.
Right, right.
That was his villain name. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's also.
But that's not the end of this. He's not the only villain in this.
Well, no, but Jason Blood makes an appearance.
He's 3/4 of it.
Right. Jason Blood, the demon, makes an appearance in there, and whatever. But to me, that idea of, you know, the Justice League can't deal with this, it's kind of funny because the Justice League says, well, you know, we've got control of Gotham, we've got control of Metropolis, but who is watching Florissant, Louisiana, or whatever? Yeah.
Down the bayou.
And to me, what's actually kind of funny is because this last 9/11, I was watching a documentary. And this documentary was just people all over New York who had cameras filmed a whole bunch of stuff and uploaded it to this website just to share their video. And someone went through all this random video and put together a documentary, okay? And there's this one point where these, garbage men are sitting around and they're watching the TV, they're trying to figure out what the heck's going on, and one of them's like, you know, We were prepared for New Year's Eve, we were prepared for Christmas, but who was ready for September 11th? Like, it's a Tuesday. Who pays attention to a Tuesday? And it's the same idea here in Swamp Thing, where he's like, we were watching Metropolis, we were watching Gotham, but who the hell was watching Louisiana? You know, it's like, it's this threat that comes out of nowhere that you're not prepared for. You think we're ready for all these big hits, but, you know, Swamp Thing as a book, it's a B-level book. It's a horror book. Horror book never sells the numbers that Justice League or Superman or Batman does. Mm-hmm. But yet the story in this B-level character book, suddenly people started realizing this is a great story.
It's like, a classic.
Yeah, this is what we need to pay attention to. What stories were coming out of Justice League in 83 that you were paying attention to? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. I mean, because eventually they had to do Crisis and kill off all the people who were in Justice League so they could bring back the people who mattered. You know? It's like, this is our flagship book, and nobody's reading it.
Ooh, that's kind of like Brightest Day.
Kind of, in a sense.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just kind of interesting to me that I was reading that, and suddenly it just kind of struck me. They were like, yeah, well, you know, we watch all these major places, but who's watching these smaller things?
What did you think of the white monkey in the second part of the Swamp Thing?
That funky monkey?
The funky monkey. The white monkey.
That was kind of a neat interpretation, because you're supposed to fill in the blanks with your white monkey. Like, what scares you the most? Stop. It's a family show. But just think of, you know, yeah, it's kind of hokey, but we were talking about Twilight, folks, before.
Twilight?
Twilight Zone, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, we will not be talking about Twilight.
We're talking about glittery vampires.
We were talking about the older ones that actually kind of creeped us out, and there was so, to me, that was it. I understood where they were getting at, but yet it seemed to be bringing on a whole bunch of the Twilight Zone eras. The kid that kind of wishes whatever he wishes and he gets. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. It's Alan Moore at his best. For sure. And for being so young in his career, as we've learned. Wow.
So this was a major discovery for Alan Moore, then. This was a major title for him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This might have made him.
Well, because he was kind of known in British comic circles for 2000 AD, which is the Judge Dredd. That's where Judge Dredd came from.
And then he crossed the ocean.
Right. But, I mean, really, how many people pay attention to comics in other countries?
So this was his Beatles U.S.
Yeah, this was his Ed Sullivan debut.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is really... Because, if I remember... Swamp Thing, like this particular series, ended up going like 100 issues or thereabouts.
Because that started over in issue
with Alan
three.
Moore.
Well, because then it not with Alan Moore.
No, Alan
that's Moore. All the Alan Moore, right?
Right.
Maybe. No, I think there's a volume. No, he did another 6 or 8 issues after this.
Okay.
Because I think there's another hardcover, a second Alan Moore volume 2. But, before it eventually relaunched with Vertigo when they did the big push for the Vertigo titles. Mm-hmm. But up until that point, it was Saga the Swamp Thing continued all the way through the 80s, until they made the Vertigo push. So this was a book on the verge of cancellation. They just said, do whatever the hell you want with it, because we don't think it's going to be around in 6 months.
And then
next thing you know, it goes for another, like, 80 issues or whatever after this.
Okay.
So,
let me see that again.
Are you going to give it back?
Damn, he's good.
You can have done
that man's good. That boy's good.
So, yeah. So, like, again, like I said, there...
What was the price on that?
$24.99.
Yeah. $24.99.
Yeah. Well, go buy it.
Go. It's worth every penny.
Yep.
But like I said, with Alan Moore, there's some stuff
he's
written...
currently in Vertigo now, right? That title's in Vertigo.
Actually, I don't think Swamp Thing's in print at the moment.
No, but if you were to order that, it's through...
Well, it's Vertigo, which is part of DC. Yeah. And, you know, Alan Moore, like, V for Vendetta, Watchmen, you know, I feel like a lot of his stuff kind of has these issues where he doesn't really, you know, leave the story room for interpretation, or he doesn't really, you know, let the characters develop on their own, which I feel he did here. And I think he didn't let the message kind of overpower, because this very well could be an environmental book. Like, this very well could be, like, Greenpeace's favorite comic, you know, if you wanted to get
into
all that.
Back in 83, though? I mean, even if that was the case...
That was the selfish Reagan era.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Alan Moore? I mean, have you seen Alan Moore?
Right, exactly.
I mean,
then, people had the crocodile shirts and Fieros.
No. he was the guy still holding out the Nehru jacket. He probably still had some bell-bottom pants on when he wrote this. You're like, this is 83, man. Get rid of those 1937 pants. But that's all he had because he wouldn't buy new pants. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's Alan Moore. So, you know, I mean, at the point he was writing this, he was probably still in 69 when he wrote this book in 83. You know what I mean? Like, he's just now hit 1987, and it's 2010.
Right.
So yeah, I enjoyed the fact that he didn't let the message overpower the story, that I kind of feel like V for Vendetta.
I felt this would have been another good issue for a Halloween show.
Well.
It could have qualified.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
We just didn't have it then. So.
Too much to read, folks. But keep sending it.
Keep sending us free books. We'll cover them.
We are covering. I think we're catching up.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, another Alan Moore book, The Courtyard, from Avatar. Our friends at Avatar.
Yes.
All right. We'll be right back.
What's up, all? This is Sween Hollick from Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you're listening to a Primo Pop Culture Network podcast.
Go. Welcome back, folks. We're entering the third segment of episode Foomph of Comaholics.
Are we on 5 now?
5.
We got to find a foreign language version of 5.
Foomph. Das ist Foomph. 5 in German.
See, I didn't take German.
Ein, zwei, drei, vier, Foomph.
I took Latin in high school.
Okay.
You know why I took Latin in high school? Because the Latin teacher was retarded.
Like D-D-D or like...
like
simpleton.
She would go. She would go. Hey, we're gonna watch this movie about Rome,
mm-hmm.
and she'd play like Last Days of Pompeii. She'd walk out of the room. We would rewind the movie. She would walk back in, and she'd go, "Oh, this is a good part. You should pay attention to this part because it shows how they treated the slaves back in those days." She'd walk out of the room. We'd rewind the movie. She'd walk back in. She'd go, "Oh, you should pay attention to this part because it's going to show how they treated the slaves back in the Roman Empire." She'd walk out of the room. We'd rewind the movie.
She had like a short attention deficit or something.
Well, yeah, it would take us like 2 weeks to watch a 2-hour movie in Latin class because we would just keep rewinding.
Maybe she's a genius. She's trying to avoid work.
But it was
how many
great.
Tests did you have to take? One?
Probably.
None.
And she was your Latin teacher?
Yeah, my Latin teacher.
That's pretty good, though.
Well, she would hand us a test. Yeah. I would take the test. And I would put it in the spot underneath the desk, you know, that little cubby hole.
And then pass it on
to
the next guy?
Well, no. I wouldn't take the test.
Oh.
I would just put it in the cubby hole.
Mm-hmm.
I would just sit there for an hour and draw pictures.
Oh.
And then I would walk out of the room at the end of the class period. So then the next day, she would go, I didn't get a test from you. I was like, well, I was here. What the hell else did I do? I was in class, and she would go, oh, right, you probably got an A. And she would write an A in the book.
Oh,
hell.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only class I got straight A's in.
Not my German teacher. My German teacher was the opposite. And she used to, like, pick her nose and, like, touch the girls' hairs in the class. It was really bizarre. Really bizarre.
Okay, so,
oh, man, and I went to your school, and I know what teacher.
And we won't name the student. Yeah.
Okay, so a couple drinks in. Let's talk about Alan Moore's The Courtyard.
Mazel tov.
Oh. Like,
clink. All right, yeah.
Yeah, my can is a cozy. It's kind of hard to clink.
I'm cozy with your can.
Ooh. Whoa!
The Courtyard. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And the only reason why I'm saying that now, if I would have picked this up when it originally printed, I probably would have been talking something
totally
different.
Now, do you
totally
think it's
different.
Because you've read Neonomicon
yes.
first?
I strongly believe that's
right. I have bought Neonomicon.
Yeah,
I have not read it.
You're
yeah, because I get like 10,000 comics a week.
And
so,
you know what? And folks, I'm on him. You know what? To get him ready for this podcast, like every third day I send him a text going,
yeah,
send
us 10,000 comics
yo
a week.
Dude,
I want to read those.
Okay, I work at a comic book store. I get comics at cost.
No, and
okay,
didn't I talk to Damien and say, you need to give this boy some time to read? I got your back, man.
Yeah, talk to my wife, okay?
Well, oh, Damien's your wife now?
No, I mean talk to my wife.
Man. No, no, she's
hard time.
Yeah, exactly, she scares me too. Having said that, though, I have read The Courtyard, I have not read Neonomicon. I know there's a connection. I don't know what it is because I haven't read Neonomicon.
Then you have an advantage over
But us. Having said that, reading The Courtyard, I still liked it because I am a Cthulhu fan. And I've read other Cthulhu stuff.
Are you a Cthulhu worshiper?
And I rec... No. But I recognize...
You're okay. You're okay now.
I recognize... Okay, I'm a fan of the Cthulhu literature. I'm not a fan of Cthulhu itself. I met Bob Cthulhu.
He's cool, man.
He's cool.
Bob Cthulhu is kind of a jerk. But no, I mean, I understood. Like, as soon as I started reading it, I got to a certain point where they're talking he's like, oh, are they talking gibberish? What is that? Like, I'm like, oh, okay, those are Cthulhu words. Like, I recognize that that's...
The Lovecraft style.
Yeah, whole idea behind it. And of course, you know, the tentacle monster on the back. This is either Cthulhu or Japanese porn. Because I can see the tentacle monster on the back cover. So it's like...
Well, spoiler alert. Could be both.
Yeah, but my point being, though, that not having read Neonomicon and reading The Courtyard, I still got a lot out of this story. Like, I really enjoyed... Like, I understood the... Descent into Madness.
Which
the
is
opening
funny.
Of your third eye to the other realm.
Without trying to spoil anything for you, Neonomicon was only a couple issues out, doesn't explain as much as it does in that one issue. Or this.
Yeah, this
mini,
is a.
It's a mini trade.
And this is a prestige format, is what they call this.
Okay, yeah.
It's got the harder cardboard cover, it's got the slick pages. It's longer than your standard comic, but it's not a trade paperback.
It will still fit
like
in
radical
it,
and
it, well, it's like Justice or Kingdom Come or any of those type of just prestige format. It's glued like a trade paperback with your thicker cardstock cover, but it's not a collection like a trade. Right. And it's not a graphic novel because it's not that long.
Right.
You know, a graphic novel would be, you know, 300 pages or whatever. This is, I don't even know if this cracks 100 pages long.
Comics or more, six
and two. And this is only $8. You know, so this isn't like you're buying, you know, like a huge collection of other stuff. This is a much smaller, you know,
fantastic.
And you know what? When I was at the Wizard World Comic Con, the vendor at Avatar was still pushing this like it was current. I mean, and I know, of course, he's going to push it because that's what he wants to sell. But, I mean...
February 2009.
They know that this book is the prequel to something good. And I think it's going to tie into Neonomicon, and I can't wait till you read it.
Well, the funny thing is... Okay, first of all, it's called The Courtyard.
Uh-huh.
But really, as far as
it's
this...
It's got nothing to do with The Courtyard.
Yeah, as this story goes... He walks through a courtyard and meets
the
guy...
Yeah, okay.
But, sure. Well, in Neonomicon...
Okay,
you mean?
Well, we need to decide right
are
now.
Talking, well, no, but...
Yes, if we do go to Neonomicon...
Right, but as far as this story... But as far
as this story, it's...
There's the painting. There's the painting in the courtyard of... And he goes something like, I hope
that's
a tree.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And so you know that there's something more about that image, but the image that's painted on the wall isn't explained in this.
Going back to the Lovecraftian thriller horror interpretation.
Like, are you familiar at all with Cthulhu?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just asking. Because there are a lot of people who are not.
There's a special place in my house you can't go to.
Exactly.
But, I mean, H.P. Lovecraft is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
I think that's very easy to say. It's not the easiest thing to read if you go back and read his original writings. And if you read what he said about his original writings, he said that they're not supposed to be easy to read. He picked words that are difficult to pronounce. Mm-hmm. And he wrote situations that are hard to imagine.
He was kind of like the Tolkien of horror. He wrote his own language. You know, there was many volumes based on the...
It had its own mythology.
Yes.
That extended beyond what was written.
Right. It's an anti-mythology. You know, most mythology is based on, like, you know, a victor that, you know, like, overcomes something, whereas Lovecraftian work is more about the struggle itself, and there's never, ever a resolve.
Well, and also, you know, it's just like
in the end of whatever happens in Lovecraftian work, you know, whatever piece it is, there's just going to be death and destruction and defeat and
isolation as well, because like some of his stuff is just like, you know, him on a string to beach, or him like in,
and like, I don't know, said, like it, I don't know the biography behind Lovecraft.
No, but just like his writings is kind of like that, and like Poe is more kind of like poetic but darky edge. Lovecraft is explaining it, and
well Poe is more gothic.
Yeah,
and I mean that's a simple term to go to, whereas Lovecraft he it's almost like he had a mythology he was working from that nobody knew. Where it's like, if you wrote a story about Vikings, all right, Norse gods, all right, and you started writing about Thor, not the Marvel Comics Thor, but the actual Norse god of Thor, you could write about Thor and tell stories, and you wouldn't have to necessarily explain who Loki was. You wouldn't have to explain who Odin was. People just kind of knew, because there were these other stories. Lovecraft wrote a lot of stories talking about characters and beings and planes of existence, just like there they are in his stories, didn't explain necessarily any of the histories or the characters, where they came from, or their relationships, but you just kind of understood that there was this other kind of history behind it that he didn't go into detail about.
Okay, so now, I want to jump off Alamore, and I want to give some props to Jason Burroughs here.
Okay.
I didn't even know this till I started flipping through the book, because you usually read through a book and then you don't really flip back. But, like, look at page 4, and then look at page, like, the last...
Oh, yeah. How it's the same frame of him sitting there.
Oh, my God, that's so beautiful. It all ties together.
Right, it's a cycle.
I mean, talk about flow. Right. I mean...
Well, one thing I want to say is that Jason Burroughs, like, I like
his artwork. But it's still simple frames. That's what's so bizarre about this.
The whole book is broken into just vertical.
It's either two by eight frames.
The whole page, or it's frames. Two vertical frames.
Right.
But one thing, well, I just want to say, like,
the tie-in between Burroughs and Moore is great.
Okay, yeah. I just want to say, though, Jason Burroughs, I like his artwork on Crossed, but I can tell, if you were to hand me Crossed and hand me this book and say which one came first, I could definitely say that this is a much earlier stage in his development. He has come a long way in his ability to draw people, his ability to do expressions, and to do, I don't know, drawing people and drawing like their clothes are two different things. When you draw a person and you're drawing an inanimate object, a person, I don't want to use a term like organic, but a person has a certain feel to them that cloth doesn't.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to defend this artist a little bit more than I did the last one. One thing I did like about Burroughs in this was the way he framed the structure of the faces. For example, the cop with the long brow.
Right.
And it had that, you know, this guy is an undercover detective feel.
Right, well, I just want to say, like, the, when he draws detail, like, this guy is, this undercover police officer is living in, like, the shanty hovel hotel.
With, like, the crazy girl, like...
Right, who's phone calling Dan Letterman, yeah, talking about his toupee.
No, not phone calling him, like, that's, she's talking to him in the room.
Oh, I thought she was on the phone.
No,
that's... Okay, well, regardless. Like, he has a great sense of detail when it comes to the locations that he doesn't necessarily have with the people yet. And I think when he gets into Crossed... He's at a further point in his development as an artist where the people...
Stand alone.
The people have that development where they don't really have it in this book yet.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm not necessarily...
Detail? You think it's because of more detail?
Not necessarily detail, but a different feeling to him. But the point being that this isn't... Like, I'm not going to say that this is bad, but that work on Crossed is better. Like, I can definitely tell... He's an earlier stage in his development when he did this book. That's not to say it's bad, but if you're familiar with him from Crossed, and then you go back and you read this, then you're going to look at this and go, okay, this is a little more simple, because I can tell that he's not as well developed in his art style at the point where he did this book.
Moving forward with the discussion of this book, I feel that we should try not to spoil this too much, because it is so early.
Well, but...
It's hard not to.
Yeah.
Just with discussion of there is a lot of depth in here, and I honor exactly what you're trying to do.
Okay, then let's just jump in with both feet then, because Dan and I have both read Neonomicon 1 and 2. So we're going to spoil a little bit for...
Before you jump into Neonomicon, this story is, in the courtyard, is actually very simple. I mean, honestly...
Private Dick spying on what he thinks is going on. I can sum it up really quickly. A private dick who's spying on what's going on...
Well, he's
like
a fed.
You're right, I'm sorry. Not a private dick, a fed. But he's, like, working, like, on black ops hours.
Right.
So he's, like, off the grid.
Okay, now you're getting too detailed.
Okay.
Simplify it more.
All right. So he's spying on this church...
No, simplify it more.
Okay. Organization, he's investigating, may have some occult attributes.
Simplify it more. It
has to do with drugs.
Okay, simplify it more. It's a cop trying to do a drug bust.
Right, okay, sure.
And when he gets the goods, he finds a portal into a different realm of understanding.
You got it.
That's the whole story.
Why did you say, Eris, shut up?
But yeah, he enjoys it, and that's just what
happens. But I mean, that gets into character development. But the basic story is a cop doing a drug bust, and he goes to get a sample.
A hardened cop been through scenarios like this before.
Right, but I mean, that's the whole story. This is a cop going in to get a sample so he can do a bust.
Right.
That's all it is. But it gets into these little nuances where he says, my boss knows something more, and I don't know what more is. I know there's something more, but the basic simple story is this is a cop going in to get a sample so he can do a bust.
Now, just trying to just go in a little bit into Neonomicon here without spoiling it for you, there's a little bit of the same premise going on with Neonomicon.
Okay.
So the flow from the courtyard, even though there's a time-space difference, when was courtyard written?
February 2009.
Okay, so there's over a year difference.
Yeah, over a year difference.
It ties in beautifully with Neonomicon. In fact, that is almost like a source book for the next two issues going into Neonomicon.
Well, one thing about
I wish I would have read that before I read Neonomicon.
Right.
Well, I didn't even know it existed.
Actually, I'm glad
until
I
went to Wizard
did.
World.
I am, like, fascinated because, to me, it seemed like...
Because you read Neonomicon first?
I read Neonomicon first, and it seemed like the cliché-ish, like, you know, male and female FBI agents going to investigate this old FBI agent in the Neonomicon.
Who is
the courtyard. And spoiler alert, once again, we said this was like totally filled with it. And so that's how I perceived it, was this guy, and he's talking gibberish, and he's doing this stuff, and he's doing that stuff. And actually, by Neonomicon, I mean, there is even facial, and there is like self-mutilation things that he has done to like make himself look different from...
Spoiler alert, he said facial, and I'm not being... Well, yeah, too late.
You can't. This whole episode's full of it. But.
Yeah. Well, I flipped through Neonomicon. I know there's going to be some of that in there.
And so, it's one of those that I read that and I thought, oh, you know, kind of neat. Yeah, it's just a story guy. But then to come back and find that there is a comic that is almost 2.5 comics worth, compressed one, about that one character that I saw in two different comics. There's some overemphasis of him, feeling that he's going to be a main support in with his research into the religion,
right.
Going back to the courtyard.
Well, okay, and like, let me like
go back to Cthulhu.
Well, let me just say the cover of this book actually kind of tells the whole story. Okay,
a stranger.
Because look at the front cover. Mm-hmm. You've got this.
Oh, I never noticed the broken tile under his feet.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tile's starting to break away, but it's a guy standing at the gate, getting ready to walk through, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's actually a wrap cover. It's one continuous image. So in the back, you see the wall is starting to break away, and he is kind of merging with this wall. Like, reality is breaking down, and behind him is the Cthulhu monster. Now, this story starts out as this federal agent. He's kind of watching these drug dealers. He knows there's some, like, weird mutilations and murders going on. He doesn't really know anything about it.
And there's some character build in there where
somehow it ties into his case, but he doesn't really know how it all works. None of this really seems to make sense, but who cares? He's been a cop all his life. He's been an agent all his life, whatever. He's going to get these drugs. He's going to bust this guy. He's going to go home. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. So he goes to this club. He meets this guy. He sets up this drug deal for later on. It's a cop story. It's a cop story. This
but
is
dirt.
But I mean that's the cop story. But then he goes and he makes the deal. He tries the sample.
That's the Alan Moore
and reality
twist.
Just blows up.
That's
on
the Alan Moore twist. That's how Alan Moore operates.
Well, I know, but that's
he
what I'm saying.
He gets you comfortable, and then he makes you feel so wrong.
Right, because this is story A. This is where your story starts.
Yeah.
It's a regular cop story. There's nothing special about it.
I almost want to know,
but
like.
Then,
what was
you
this
get
like,
second part of the story. The second part of the story is where reality breaks down.
Did Avatar like go to Alan Moore and say, you know, give us a little pet peeve project and see where you go with it? And then he created the courtyard and they're like, oh, we love it. You need to expound on
Wait,
it.
Wait, what's a pet peeve project?
I hate it so much.
You mean a pet project?
Pet project. I said peeve.
Yes.
No,
you said
pet
peeve.
Hey, thank you.
Have another drink.
Yeah. All right. Pet project.
Who's that next?
Wadate. Yeah, that's right, folks. Don't touch that dial. Alan Moore, in the courtyard, this issue was a fine expression of the way he twists. He'll make you comfortable with something, and then he'll sweep the rug out from underneath your feet.
Right.
He has a way of putting words where he makes you think you're going to go in this direction, and then it's a U-turn.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of Cthulhu is it's breaking down reality. And it's like another, like, parallel dimension. It's another reality outside of our human reality. And like I said, this starts out as a cop story.
It's very Twilight Zone.
It's a cop who's doing this drug bust. He gets a sample. His mind is awakened. And then his voice pattern, like, he's using normal words throughout this entire story. And after he tries this drug and realizes that there's this alternate reality out there, then suddenly these other words start popping up. You know, so he's saying, like, well, I'm just going to walk down the street and talk to Yerger Florga about what am I, you know. It's like, you know, those Cthulhu words start to pop up, words with a lot of vowels and apostrophes in the middle of them for no apparent reason.
But no, to add on there, there's a whole Ulther Cats, the, like, punk, like, hardcore band where they start singing normal, and then it goes
they're
to,
singing
like,
gibberish, right?
That was really, I thought, really neat. Like this whole like occult, you know,
that underground
evil rock band
movement.
Underground thing. Like everybody shows up and they're doing this weird drug that's actually DMT,
right?
In
Alco is
Alco is what he speaks into his ear, and like it translates into this like massive, trippy last four or five pages of this. Oh, what? It's towards the very end.
Yeah.
The artwork in that is really abstract and beautiful.
Right.
Like
Jason Burroughs is his best, I think. And
I wouldn't say at his That.
Well, no, yeah, I hear you, but I will say he never ceased to amaze me.
That is really cool. The eyeball with the teeth going down into like a.
I mean, that's just impressionistic, you know, alternate reality. I mean, I had blacklight posters that looked like that. I know.
This is like some kind of like fractal I think I had over my bedroom.
The tree has teeth, man.
Yeah. Oh, and then damn. This part right here, this picture is taken out of the very beginning where,
you saw that in that.
Garth Ennis does a little irreverent banter about Alan Moore in the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. And it's rather amusing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole part.
Actually, right, I guess the thing that, like, intrigues
me. Is that supposed to be Alan Moore there? Is that, like, the kind of, like, the
Alan giveaway? Moore is, like, has a thick, dark beard and long hair.
It's kind of like that. It's, yeah.
Well, okay. Anyway.
Okay.
How I'm interpreting it, and how I'm reading it in the format that I am, I'm wondering how you're going to after you read Neonomicon. And hopefully you enjoy it as much as I do.
I think you're getting kind of a sneak peek.
Well, I mean, like I said, it's one of those things that I've bought. I've bought them, you know. I'm going to read them eventually.
Yeah.
I just have so much stuff that piles up and piles up.
Because all right, well, that brings us to the next topic of discussion. The next podcast, I've been pushing my fellow brothers here to expound on doing nothing but Avatar.
We're going
to
do an Avatar-themed podcast next time for Comaholics.
Yes.
For episode 6.
I'm very excited about this, folks.
And so we're hoping we're going to do an Avatar-themed show, and we're actually going to send it. We've made some contacts with some people at Avatar, mm-hmm. So we're going to send it to them, to their attention, and open up a dialogue with Avatar.
I'd like to throw this out there. Any of you fans out there, you want to send us some suggestions of what you think? Because, you know, we've been...
Wait, I'm going to say this. We're an hour and a half into this podcast.
This is the longest, yeah.
This is the longest podcast, I think, in the history of the Pop Culture Network at this point. And I don't know.
So if you're still listening and you have a suggestion on what we should cover for
you're
the Avatar show.
You're a hardcore fan if you're still listening to this show.
Have a suggestion on what we should cover for this Avatar show.
I'm saying Jason versus Jason X.
Okay.
We still have to do. Because that's the best worst comic I've ever read.
Hit us on the forum and let us know what you think.
What?
You mentioned some scotch and I totally forgot it.
You have scotch?
You have scotch?
I think so.
Oh, this podcast is getting out to a 6.
We're going to hour 3.
I don't know. I had to look for it. I had to look for it, folks. Please. Don't want to ruffle.
So, all right. So, if you have any suggestions, just go to our forum on the popculturenetwork.com and let us know what you think we should cover. But we've been juggling around a few options. Really excited about what we're going to do. So whatever it's going to be.
Well, you know, I mean, here's a good.
We were thinking about like some mainstream, some off the cuff.
Right, but here's the good thing really to talk about here is that first of all, if you're still listening, you're a hardcore listener. It's still going to be an hour and a half into the show. But if there's something that you're wondering, like, hey, should I read that?
Yeah,
it's something from Avatar that they did 2 years ago, let us know because. We have the ability to get a hold of this stuff, to read it, and then we can sit here and talk about it, and you can decide whether or not you want to, spend your hard-earned money on it. Because right now, I could tell you, if you're wondering, well, I kind of like a lot of this Avatar stuff, but I don't know if I should buy the Courtyard. I'm going to tell you right now, buy the Courtyard.
Yes.
I mean, obviously. Like, yeah, we will all agree it's worth spending your $8 on to get a copy
of
this.
And you know what? We did not spoil it that bad. So if you listen to
this, I think we did.
It's not that spoiled.
But it's one of those things, we can talk about a musical album, but until you listen to the album, it doesn't make sense.
While watching The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, so we can sit there and talk about the Courtyard, till the cows come home, but we all agree that you should read it. You should buy it. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, I don't know, they did this series a couple years ago, I don't know if I should read it. Let us know, and we'll read it, and we'll talk about it, and then, help you decide. So, if there's something you're wondering about, ask us, mm-hmm. and we'll let you know.
Most definitely. Be our pleasure.
Ignition City.
And we've got to vote for a game.
Yeah, we've got some votes out
there. I've got to vote for Absolution. Yeah. I think we need to cover that one. Yeah. But, you know, like Eris was saying, stop by the forums. You can stop by at popculturenetwork.com, click on forums. You can also leave us a voicemail. It's area code 217-953-4025. And that's our 24-hour automated voicemail line. You never have to talk to a human being if you don't want to. Just call and leave us a voicemail. We can use that. Also, feel free to send us an email. You can send me an email, dirt@popculturenetwork.com. You can also stop by ineedcomics.com. Leave a comment by any of these posts that we put up on the website. Also, if you really look hard enough, you can find YouTube channels. You can find Facebook pages. You can find... all sorts of stuff. Any ways to get a hold of us. If you've got any questions, comments, you know, feel free to stop by and find out. That's my spiel. Yeah. I got through it in about two breaths there, yeah. So that was pretty good there. Anything else you guys want to add before we sign off for today?
No. Nope. Just looking forward to the next one. Give us your suggestions because we're kind of stumped on,
we've got, after we do the Avatar show, we've got North 40 from Wildstorm.
I know we have Hawaii coming up next.
We've got the... collector's edition of Muhammad Ali versus Superman. Woo-hoo! That DC Comics sent us.
I'm pumped for
that one. So we're going to do a review on that. And although we've only got those, I think those are the only two that are pressing right now. We've got a couple other things, but we're free to take our time on them. But those two will be, after the Avatar episode, those two will definitely be there. So.
And I just want to give thanks again to DC and Wildstorm. For contributing and helping us with the show.
Very much so.
Well, and also, I'm going to say Boom Studios. We're gonna cover some more from Boom Studios. We did 28 Days Later a couple episodes ago.
Oh,
but
yes.
Boom Studios is actually giving us a lot of stuff now.
Okay, great.
They've hooked us up with a bunch of PDFs of a lot of their stuff. Pretty much anything that Boom Studios has done in the last 2 years, I want to say, we have access to now through their official press channel. So,
thank you.
So that's nice. So there's a couple things from there that we'll probably cover in some point in the future. So thanks to them for all of that. So you guys, just stay tuned. I mean, at this point, it's just one of those things where I think we're just going to need more beer.
Yeah.
I think this is really coming down to. Got to get more beer. And make your wife have more popcorn. Make your wife have more. Have your wife make more pop.
She's
I need another beer.
Fantastic with it.
So I am the Apocalypse Leopakis.
It's your buddy Dirt.
This is DJ House.
Saying, zip it up and zip it in.
Why do you say that?
I don't know until I come up with something else. Wad of tape. Tip it out.
See you guys.
Slap it on a side biscuit.
Beans and cornbread.